that's what we're doing today. Questions and responses, not answers, responses. So this is an open forum to ask the spiritual question that might be on your heart or mind today. You might have thought you were living into some question yesterday or a couple hours ago, and now it's a different one. But we're usually constantly in a curious space, aren't we, of when we're evolving on our spiritual path. And so if there's something you want to ask out loud, we have a couple of mic runners that are happy to bring you a microphone.
Hi. So moving into this season, I'm kind of wondering what I can do spiritually to prepare, kind of in an Advent way, and I see that was part of your talk or direction you're going in. And what's happening within me is kind of, how do I prepare my inner manger? And also what's coming up for me is amends. Like, I really want to clean up. So any thoughts on that?
Beautiful. Yeah, wonderful question. Advent is traditionally the 4 weeks before Easter. I always start off right from there, right? Before Christmas. And it's that preparation for what we celebrate, which is the divine spirit, the Christ consciousness being reborn in us again. So every year, an opportunity, right, to acknowledge that which is, Paul said, I die daily, so really is always being reborn, but a concentrated energy around the joy of that, the bringing of the light. And so the stages of Advent are faith, peace, love, and joy. Each Sunday is a celebration of that theme. So a part of it, I would say, Elizabeth, is, and for all of you, is really getting, you know, sinking into those themes and bringing that kind of energy to your experience each of those weeks. I mean, that's always the intention, right? As we have a theme each Sunday, is to really kind of marinate in that theme throughout the week and bring it forth in your life. So Unity puts out these lovely Advent booklets that have readings and kind of meditative readings in addition to the daily word that are on theme. And so that's a lovely thing. You can download them if you just go to unity.org. You can have an electronic copy or you can order a paper copy. And we might actually have some in the bookstore. I'm not sure if we ordered them yet this year. So that's one thing, is to bring in contemplation, reflection into your meditation time, and to really walk those themes. So the other, about the amends, I love that intention, by the way. That's a good thing for all of us, right? And what a beautiful thing to do during this time, because as we're moving toward that rebirth of consciousness, and that is to clear the path, right? And that's really what you're saying. I'm clearing the path. I'm opening up the space of my heart to experience this joy of the truth of who I am, more to reveal more of the truth of who I am. So I think that process of amends, was the question how to, or just how to incorporate it? Yeah. So lots of different ways you can do that. I mean, journaling is always lovely, self-inquiry, you know, what is it that I need to forgive or let go? So just sitting with those questions and writing your answers, perhaps, or maybe you'll even want to draw them or some other kind of artistic expression of what that is, and then to follow through, right? If there is actually an amends to make with somebody, if it's somebody who's passed on, you can write them a letter, you can speak to them, hold maybe a sacred object or their picture, perhaps. That could be a part of it. And if there's somebody who's living that you could connect with and call them up or write, be a lovely thing to do. So those are a couple of ideas.
Hi, I'm Mia. And, oh yeah, I guess forgiveness could somehow be tied into a Christmas theme, if you were trying to. And I think my question is, it can be very hard to forgive someone when you're still very hurt. And I guess my question is, can you even get to forgiveness when you're still in that hurt, or do you have to let it all out, or I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a process. So I think it's a process of being with wherever you are in the process. So a place of accepting that you still feel hurt and being with that and allowing yourself to feel that, to grieve, to express it, to really be kind to yourself and give yourself self-love. And then, over time, we move into other phases, right? And so at some point, if your true heart's desire is to forgive, you'll get there, but you don't have to push the process. You know, that image is coming to mind of that's often given of the butterfly that, you know, you don't want to pull the wings out of the butterfly. You got to let it come out of the cocoon and let its wings come out and dry in its own time before it can fly. And so if you think of those stages as a part of forgiveness and just being, I really think more than anything, being kind and self-loving and giving yourself a lot of space to be. Yeah. Yeah. I love the intention, though. The intention sounds really pure, and that's where maybe you're headed. Yeah.
This is Eileen. I think you kind of answered my question. The subject matter is different, though. I struggle a whole lot with being this persona in this third dimensional world versus the oneness, experiencing the oneness as you were speaking of it in the meditation, that letting go of all the differentiation and getting down to what is beneath, beyond. It's so hard for me to do, and I struggle with it daily, minutely. And I guess the answer is like the butterfly, let it happen when it happens. But it's hard being in the liminal space, or the middle muddle is what I call it. I just feel like I'm so in the middle muddle all the time, and want to be more deeply conscious than it feels like I am being.
How many people can relate to Eileen's question? That's the journey right there, isn't it? Being in the middle muddle. I love that, middle muddle. And yeah, part of it is acceptance and kindness with ourselves. Again, I hear the earnestness, you know, the desire to feel it, to be it, to bring it forth in the world and to share that experience of that we sometimes really connect with, right? We really sometimes fall into that oneness and we really feel it. And then, you know, it's kind of like, I love humanity, but don't like humans so much. You know, have you ever heard that one? I'm not saying that about me, well, necessarily, but but that saying, you know, is kind of, it speaks to that idea of we can be in that really yummy space of oneness and connection and all is love, and then we get out in the world and stuff sort of knocks us around and we get back in the, you know, the middle muddle. and just being kind to ourselves with the journey, recognizing what we understand and what we're headed toward and what we, it's not just theory either. You know, we have had experiences of oneness, and it's really that experiential part, that feeling part, those experiences and times that we have felt that, to know that it's there. And so, you know, silence can be a great way to step into that and then to carry it forward into the world to the best of our ability and to just start over when we get off track. Yeah, but that's the journey. So thank you for sharing it with us.
Good morning, I'm Ben.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Ben.
How do I become more present to God when there's chaos, when there's so many things going on in the world, war, et cetera, et cetera?
You guys are really good. Breathe, right? There's a lot of breathing going on. There's a lot of being with our feelings and not shying away from that. We talked a little bit about this at the 9:30, you know, the tendency to want to run from our sensitivity, right? Numb it out, distract ourselves from it, turn away. And yet finding our way to dance with the feelings, to, again, be kind to ourselves in the process, but not to fully turn away, not to give up, but to just stay the course. And finding the ways that we can feel supported, like sharing in this kind of space, being in prayer circles, meditating with other people, talking to other spiritually minded people about what's on our hearts, and really, you know, having listening partners. Somebody was telling me one day that they have a friend, but she was talking about friends that she has, that they will call each other and they say, "I just need you to listen." And then the other person will talk as long as they want to talk. And then the other person might need it a different day or that same day. But it's just, it's like an agreement that we're going to listen to each other. That can really make a huge difference. And just, you know, I'm struggling. You know, I feel this, I see this, I'm upset by it. And I know that there is a spiritually, a way that I can be supported through it spiritually. And so it's each other, it's prayer, it's meditation, it's, you know, all the things that feed you and bring you joy, doing more of that, or just simply a beingness in it. And the feeling is a gift. You know, the tears are a gift to the world. Sometimes we think we have to do something to fix it. But maybe we can't necessarily fix it. We can just contribute to the evolution and the solution and the ease of some of the pain.
It's really easy to be spiritual when everything's going your way. You know, life is good. You got money in the bank or whatever. You're happy. Yeah, you know, I went through this period of really exterior, you know, horribleness, and I did not think that God was good. I was really angry, and, you know, I finally got through it. But what advice do you give to people who are, say, in chronic pain or, you know, financially devastated, or how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I hear the law, like what seems like a loss of faith that you just spoke to, right? Which is often really not, it seems like that on the surface, but a lot of times it's a deepening of faith. I think of St. John of the Cross when he talked about the dark night of the soul. He wasn't just talking about the outer things like you just mentioned, although those are important and they can send us into this space. But the dark night of the soul is not about, I got a diagnosis or I lost my money and went bankrupt or I... Those are outer things that happen in the world. The dark night of the soul is that feeling like I lost my faith. I lost my connection. I don't, like, there's a spiritual, what the desert mothers and fathers or some of the early monks and nuns would call spiritual aridity. Like, it gets dry. It's like desert, right? And there's like, oh, where's that juicy feeling? Where's that sense that I am loved? Where is that, you know, whatever it is, peace or whatever it is that you might experience when you feel like your faith is really alive and well? But yet it is in those times that are some of the richest times for us to be, because we're in a kind of a crucible of transformation in those times. So it may seem like, oh man, there's nothing, you know, the presence is gone here. I'm not feeling anything anymore. And I just feel like I'm just sort of, you know, flapping around in the wind in the world, and I don't have that mooring anymore. And then here it comes again, right? And when it comes again, it's richer and it's deeper, and it's a kind of knowing that we can bank on. Then when the next thing comes in life, because it will, that is a challenge, we have a deeper mooring and a knowing, ah, I did walk through that desert time and I found water again. I found living water again, and I will again. So it's that kind of knowing that happens in those times. So it's really reminding ourselves that I've been through difficult times before, and it's, that's what's happening for me right now, an opportunity to transform. Hi, Karen.
I'm Karen. Nice to see everybody today. My question is about change. And I find that when I'm about to make a change, I get very fearful. And then I backpedal and doubt myself. And I understand that there's especially when I'm trying to make a change around an area I've had trauma in. So there's like this, I think I'll stay here because at least it's familiar and comfortable. So I need to make an important change, and I'm doing this. So I just put that out this morning to you and to everybody.
There's a Nias Nin quote about when the time became too painful to remain in the bud. You remember that one? Yeah, that's what comes to mind, is that when it gets too uncomfortable to be in that familiar pain point or familiar, dissatisfaction place, then we move. Or Michael Beckwith talks about we can be pushed by pain or we can be pulled by a vision. And so maybe it's the pain that gets bad enough that you go, okay, this isn't working anymore. Or maybe it's the catching of the vision that goes, I can do that. I'm drawn there. I'm called there. There's light there. And so it doesn't have to, I think what scares us is the huge chasm, right? That seems like this is such a big leap. This is so far to go. But if we break it down and just go, oh, but there's a little bit of light right here. I'm just going to step into the light. And then we do that. And then, oh, there's a little bit more light. And pretty soon we've gotten to that place that we visioned, but we were just taking one step at a time, quite literally. So find the baby step, and then you'll bloom.
Hi.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, I'm Paul.
Paul.
Really briefly, I just want to speak to what Ted said. I love your response to it. And I wanted to add one of the books that you have in the bookstore, The Four Laws of Spiritual Prosperity by Edwin Gaines. That, I think, is an answer to the question presented, right? Is those four spiritual laws having small, long-term goals that you're setting and hitting consistently, paying 10% tithing to a person, place, or organization that you're getting your spiritual food from, living in a way where we're forgiving everyone all the time, especially ourselves, and living unto our divine purpose and recognizing that oftentimes we are completely sidetracked from our divine purpose. So coming back to what is our divine purpose and living into that. With that, the question I have is when we feel stuck, almost like eternally stuck, you know, how do we get unstuck?
Well, I've seen you move on the labyrinth, Paul. Some of you have seen him move on the labyrinth. So I say dance. Dance is an amazing way to unstick stuff in the body. And when you unstick stuff in the body, you unstick energy. And when you unstick energy, you flow back into your divine purpose. So, simple answer. I have one. It's quiet for a moment. And I have one from last summer. There were a couple of questions. We did this last summer. And there were a couple of questions that got stuck in my notebook. So I apologize to whoever had a burning question that they wrote down. But I trust they would have asked it at the time. But anyway, I thought this one was really good. So I thought I'd bring it forward. It's on the law of attraction. And it says, is this true? Meaning law of attraction. Does the energy one creates literally attract like energy? So, law of attraction isn't exactly this definition. Law of attraction is about the thoughts and feelings that we hold. In Unity, we used to call this, before law of attraction was out there in the commonplace world, it was called the law of mind action. And we describe law of mind action as thoughts held in mind produce after their kind. And so law of attraction is the same idea, but it's basically how we think and feel. So what kind of field are we in, and our thoughts and our feelings, that's what attracts like whatever it is. So it's back behind the energy we exude. The energy we exude, you know, we've heard the story, opposites attract, right? So it might attract like energy, and you might attract opposite energy. So I don't know that while there is some interplay of energy attracting like energy, I don't think that's always a tried and true principle. But a tried and true principle is what I think and feel is going to attract something like that. Hi.
I'm Jan.
Hi, Jan.
What do you do when you've had one physical challenge after another, and it just seems like it's never going to end, and your body feels so wiped out from it that it affects your spirit? You know, it gets to the point where you just don't even want to get out of bed because you're just so exhausted from it, you know, and you don't feel like God's on your side, you know. You're just like, is this ever going to end? Am I ever going to feel better?
So it's a reaching for hope, it sounds like, and a need for rest. I mean, I heard exhausted and don't want to get out of bed. Maybe sometimes that's what what's being called in is more rest. And maybe that rest happens by staying in bed, or maybe that rest happens by taking yourself in some kind of spiritual retreat where you can just be. I mean, that can be the most amazing experience to go somewhere, especially, and we have a ton of them in California. I mean, there is no lack of possible places you can go that have an energy that is just almost palpable, either a silent kind of energy or a nurturing spa-like energy or a lovely, beautiful nature space or some combination of all of those things. And so if it's possible for you to get away and financially feasible, that can be really beautiful. If not, you can do it free. By going out somewhere, if you don't feel physically well enough to walk very far, you can make it to one of our beautiful parks, if you can, and spread out a blanket not far from your car, because you don't have to go very far to be under a gorgeous tree, in a grassy space, and just be. Take a nap. Sit under the trees and watch the leaves fall. Look at the sky and watch the clouds. There's nothing, nowhere to be and nothing to do, but to give my body what it's asking for, deep rest. And there I think you will also find your God and hope.
Hello, I'm Garrett.
Hi, Garrett.
Reverend Kristen, this may be a little awkward, but, you know, I feel nearly every question is about how we reconcile the difficulties in our lives. And the suffering that doesn't seem to make any sense. And it seems to me that we have this philosophy and unity of God is good all the time, and the universe tends towards goodness, and yet we have kind of a gap there, because I don't think Jesus really gave out all of his teachings. But almost every religion has said that what we sow, we reap. And in the Eastern religions, they talk about karma. So I'm really wondering how we in unity put this together, and if we ever dare mention it, because it sounds cruel to tell somebody when we're trying to comfort them to see it, their suffering as somehow connected to their own past or background, especially if we don't grasp the reality of reincarnation. So I'm wondering if you can address a little bit of these Eastern philosophies, which are sinking into our Western culture now, and which emphasize more the idea that we have to take responsibility, that somehow we have a purpose in life and we're here to learn and grow, and that's painful because it involves change. And it also sometimes means that we have to do the hardest thing, which is looking back at ourselves and seeing where might I be responsible and how can I use the experience to grow. So maybe you can address some of those, because this is really a problem for me. I have been brought up with believing in karma, and even reincarnation. And when I'm struck now with great difficulties, it's hard for me to always completely have that faith, you know, that the universe is good. Everything I'm experiencing is what I need to grow and learn and evolve. So that's my dilemma.
Seemed to me like your answer, your own answer, was in the question a bit about, you know, the self-responsibility piece, that that's a big part of it. And not, you know, not so much about berating ourselves or creating guilt, but calling ourselves up higher and being around people that call us up higher so that we are held accountable. You know, I think we are very kind, caring, loving people in unity in general. And every group has its shadow, right? And so that might be to a fault. It might be sometimes we need to give each other a little kick in the pants or ourselves and say, look, you know how to do this. You know you're part of the problem here. What are you contributing to this that is causing your suffering, that is causing the pain to be worse? What can you do? You know what to do to get out of this? You know, so we do know, and we do know that we know. And so it's trust, right? It's trust, and it's also a willingness to sometimes stretch ourselves and cause ourselves to rise above and even perhaps with each other, you know, if the other is willing to hear it. And sometimes they are and sometimes they aren't, and we gotta be okay with that too. So I don't know if that was a complete answer, but I did feel like you kind of, I'm glad you brought it up because it's a really important piece. Yeah, thank you.
My name is Yolanda, and first of all, I like to say thank you, Kristen, for bringing that stuff, because all the questions and answers are really resonate with my feelings. And I hear from all of you like it's like end of time, and we are dealing with such a tremendous experiences with the war and all over chaos, and we try to really figure out. And sometimes I have a feelings like I like to see the second coming of Christ, like bring us some peace, bring us some change, and we follow that road. Because right now with this chaos, it's like we rather go in a bed and cover head with a blanket instead of dealing with what's going on. And sometimes we are going with the sickness. We catch the sickness, we play with the sickness because we really don't know how to experience this new coming time. And it's coming. And it's every moment I feel like is the energy around us is really telling us the universe needs to change. The old doesn't fit us anymore. And that's why, you know, we feel like a crash, you know, fly in a cup. We don't know what to do. And coming, I dream about this, like coming Christ and like everything stop, the war, our suffering, our stress. Like we need some good feelings, because we have so much to offer, but we need some new leader who really tell us what to do with our feelings.
Yeah, I understand the desire to have a savior, right? Right. I mean, we can get it, right? We're like, oh, wow, yeah, the Christians really got that one. And we'd like some of that right now, right? And yeah, we're over here in New Thought saying, we're it. Bummer. Kind of back to Garrett's comment, right? But, you know, I think a big piece of that now is not about the individual journey. It is about the individual journey, but that is just the beginning. So it's imagining that, you know, that you have light inside of you. You know that. You've experienced that. You've probably seen it. You close your eyes. You can imagine it, or it even is maybe there sometimes. And you imagine that that light is connected to all the lights in the room. Let's do it, actually. Let's do a little visualization. So let's just drop in to that Christ light or divine light. And just know, even if you don't see it yet, that it's there. It's in all of us. And we invoke it. We invite it to come forward so that we can see it in our mind's eye, in our spiritual eye. And with every breath, that light begins to expand from us. It starts to go out in front of us. And every breath out, then it's expanding to the sides and to the back. And it's this bright, pure light. And we know it's Christ light. It's divine light. It's pure. It's loving. It's true. It's clear. It's a saving grace. And notice as it goes out around you, it also is emanating from the people that are sitting around you right now, and their light is emanating in every direction. And so as the light begins to intermingle, it multiplies and intensifies. And with every breath, then the breath becomes like a collective breath. And it is the breath of God breathing us. It is the one breathing all of us because we're allowing that breath and that light to move through us now. We're open vessels. And so that light now is intensified and bright, and it's expanding way beyond this place, out in front and to the sides and to the back and up above and below. And it keeps on going. Light after light after light is ignited as each person drops into this truth, to see this, to recognize that, oh, I do have light inside of me, and there's light, oh, wow, look, there's light behind me, and there's light in front of me, and there's light beside me, and there's light above me, and light above below me, and that light just keeps on going and keeps on expanding and keeps on raising us up out of the sadness and the suffering and the pain and the war and the disease and the cruelty and the violence, way up beyond that. And when we put our feet back on the ground, that light emanates throughout the earth and every being, and it transforms us. And we put down our weapons. And we stop yelling at each other. And bodies are healed. And relationships are in harmony. And kindness flows through us with ease. And so it is. We're not alone, and we have personal responsibility. And it's really important that we remember that we're not alone, that the spiritual journey is no longer a solo journey. It cannot be. It's not enough.
Oh, boy. I celebrated the 58th anniversary of my 20th birthday last month. My body, I love it. I got on the scale this morning. I weighed like 10 pounds less than I did this time last year, or last month. Yeah. I have people that love me. My life is marvelous. Now, what am I concerned about? By the way, I met the Christ last week. when I came out of the Lucky Store, or when I went in the Lucky Store, I saw Christ sitting on the sidewalk, and he had a dog. I went in and I bought a dog a can of dog food, and I brought it out to him with my groceries, and I gave him a couple of bucks. And what you do to the least of these, you do unto me, is what I've heard. So there was the Christ right there with his dog. Okay, now my concern is. So for those of you who don't add 20 and 58, I'm 78 years old. And I look at the obituaries and I see people younger than me that have transitioned. And I'm looking forward to this event in my life. But my concern is there are so many things I want to do. And one of them I'm doing right now, I've been talking with Reverend Kristen about getting up at, behind the podium and speaking about my experience here at Unity. But there's other things that I want to do. And I don't know if there's enough time. I want to do paintings. I want to do music. I want to play. I want to, you know, I don't climb ladders as high as I used to. I don't get on roofs anymore, but there's a lot of things I want to do. And I get into a place of procrastinating. Yeah. I've got all these things written on a piece of paper that I want to do, and maybe I'll do one of them. So help me out.
Oh, it's a beautiful question. Anybody else relate to that one? Yeah. But I love that's even your desire, you know, that there's that much passion and that much, you know, engagement in life, that there are so many things you still want to do. I felt like that when I was in my 20s. You know, like, oh my gosh, there's so many different things you can do and so many different, you know. So to have that kind of passion is really a beautiful, that alone is really amazing. And in terms of what you accomplish, you know, if you're doing what you brings you joy in the day, in the time, in the days that you have, if you're spending your days doing what brings you joy, then it's not really about the outer accomplishment or the completion, but the doing of what brings you joy. That is the key, you know? So, and if you find yourself procrastinating because it's like there's so much, right? So I just won't do anything. But it's like, but what am I doing right now that I'm, you know, am I enjoying what I'm doing in this moment? Or would it be fun to go paint something? Maybe I'll just go paint something. Maybe I won't finish it. Wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't that be cool if Mario finished my painting? You know? So, yeah, time is a human construct, but we sure let it chase us around a lot, don't we? I had a Kundalini yoga teacher once that told me, if time is eternal and we believe it's eternal, why are we all bunched up about everything? And I was like, yeah. And then he was just like, okay, let's. You know, but it's true, right? Time's eternal. So who knows in this next graduation that you're thinking about what you might be creating, what you might be up to. You'll be approaching perfection, I have no doubt. All right, it's 12:40. Wow, this is always so fun. The time just flies. Anybody have, somebody had their hand up that was a burning question to finish us out? Jen.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. This Thanksgiving dinner, well, Thanksgiving lunch I spent here and it was wonderful. But Thanksgiving dinner, I had the joy of spending it with a bunch of kids in their 20s. And I was talking to one of my son's friends and he's sort of like the symbol of somebody like doing everything the culture says is right and very successful. And he was lamenting to me how she hated his work, but he was just going to hang on to make this amount of money so then he could take a break and do this. And I thought about myself, because I've been there too, and thought about, as a kid, spending this many years being programmed, and then I've also celebrated a few 20th anniversary birthdays, then spending decades striving towards somebody else's dream. And here in my 50s, I'm like planted, you know, I'm rooted. And so two questions, is there a way to get there faster, or do we, are we all experiencing karma and starting from a different place? Because some young people seem to be very wise, and others of us take longer. So is there a way to get there faster? And if you're kind of rooted and planted, is there a way to grow where you're planted and be who you're supposed to become, even though you've been following somebody else's path for a long time?
Great questions. I think the way to get there faster is just to follow your heart sooner. I mean, it's pretty simple, right? Because that's really what happens, is we're following what our parents or our teachers or whoever society tells us we should be or do. The kids that you mentioned that are doing what they want to be doing, you know, think about my niece who's traveling the world with her fiance, and just, you know, she wasn't doing that before. She wasn't happy. She wasn't happy with the guy she was dating. She wasn't happy with the work she was, I mean, she wasn't unhappy, but she was working a lot, and she said, you know, commuting a lot. And she's like, I said, well, what do you want to do? I want to travel. And then COVID happened. And she had to just be rooted there. And that was really hard. It was really hard to stay rooted. So sometimes, you know, we struggle with one or the other. But, you know, once we do, in her case, opened her heart and followed her dream, then she met her dream guy and is traveling the world with him. And it's just, you know, just great joy. So I think that's, you know, it doesn't mean that we're going to always be in great bliss, although we like to affirm that, right? but I think that for the first part of your question. And the second part, absolutely, we can bloom wherever we are. And that's about staying present. Because there is so much beauty and so much good, no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing, no matter who we're with. And if we have it rooted inside of us, we'll see it and experience it. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a wrap. Thank you all so much for your great questions. I think, you're welcome. We do have an affirmation to end us. And thank you for all of you tuning in online. We didn't figure out a way to get your questions, but I hope that you learned something from hearing other people's today. So let's say this together. I approach my spirituality with curiosity and expand my innate power of understanding. And so it is.